Welcome to the Ozoza Lifestyle Crucial Conversations podcast. Today we are honored to have with us Sheo Ladende, who will be exploring the concept of developing a 360 perspective on life. Sheo Ladende is a graduate of psychology from the prestigious University of Ibadan, where he received his BSc and MSc in social and personality psychology. He's also a professional photographer and specializes in directing, cinematography, product photography, and portraiture. Sheo is the founder of the very successful Sevilla Protofilms Limited and has a wide range of clients. During the lockdown, Sheo began podcasting and went on through podcasting to reach out to hundreds of consistent listeners, sharing his ideals about life and family and surmounting challenges as humans. Also, he officially started the Sevilla chat room, which is born out of his passion for alleviating people's pain through therapy. He has in the last few years recorded several positive reviews and testaments to the success of his therapy sessions. He also volunteers as a therapist to African students who are schooling in Europe and don't have access to such care under their student healthcare package. This is his idea of stemming the tide of suicide among young African male students in Europe. Welcome to our podcast, Sheo.
Thank you very much. So good to be here.
Lovely to have you with us.
Thank you.
Sheo, let me start by asking you, what made you go into this field of therapy in order to alleviate people's pain?
Okay, so I've always had this thought that because I was able to go through life a bit more balanced and have a perspective that allows me to deal with life, everybody was that way. But then I started getting feedback of people's challenges and how people were dealing with stuff. Yeah. And at that point I said, okay, I think I need to do something quite differently. I need to be able to help them see what's possible. So that idea of everybody will be fine had to vanish. Everybody wasn't fine. Things were going wrong in people's lives, marriages, everyday dealings. People were crashing down. Depression was becoming serious. You know, before we'd say things like, oh, Africans are not really depressed. We can't really be depressed. But it was becoming very serious and a lot of people were spiraling. So I said, oh, I don't think everybody's going to be fine. I think I need to do something and I need to share how I have been able to deal. That's what brought this about.
Was this amongst your profession? Was this amongst your client base or amongst your social group? Or was it a combination of the two? So how did
it- A combination.
Oh, I see.
A combination, yes. So most of the clients, what happens to me is for clients, just watching them, I'm able to kind of be in their space since they are with me. Yeah. And I'm able to get what they're feeling. But people in my social group, when people say things, I'm not quick to just assume they just said that liberally. I think beyond that statement and say, oh, probably this person is going through a hard time. That's why this thing's happening. And if I delve a bit deeper, I then find out that actually they are going through something really deep and they just need someone to listen and help them out.
Yes.
That's it.
Quite interesting how you said, if I'm able to delve deeper, because I was going to say, everybody comes across people every day. Most people are grappling with most human beings, the human condition is that we have constant challenges. That is the human condition. A lot of people will not probe further. Hello, how are you? I'm fine. You know, everyone's kind of in their own thing. Private, yeah. Thinking, I don't even want to expose myself, be vulnerable. Others are like, I don't want to be intrusive. Others are like, I'm too busy, I don't have time, I have my own problems. I want to know on both sides, to what extent was it your own initiative and prompting? Obviously, when it's within your therapeutic practice, that makes sense. But with the social side, to what extent was it to do with your own kind of prompting? And to what extent was it to do with your personality and people feeling that they could, on their side, open up to you? Because it's a dance, isn't it?
Yes, it is. It is. Like you said, the last statement you made was the crux of it. I just find myself being easy to speak to. So I create an environment whereby you are safe with me. Just pour it out. I know that you might be going through stuff. I'm not the hello, hi, oh, bye, you're cool. Because I know behind the, I'm fine.
Yeah.
People actually are dealing with a lot of stuff. Everybody's dealing with something.
Yes.
Even myself, I'm dealing with something. So I know that everybody's dealing. So I just go beyond the, oh, I'm fine. Are you sure? If you're really my buddy, are you really, really sure? Like, if I find out there is something untoward based on the way you are talking to me, based on relationship, I understand this is how this person relates. And then suddenly something switches. Oh, are you fine? I'm fine, I'm fine. Are you really fine? What's happening? Something is wrong somewhere. And then I don't want to talk about, you know, you can talk about these things. And then they, okay, start a little. And I just want to listen. I don't want to tell you, oh, you are fine. Oh, don't worry. Listen, pour it out, pour it out. And the moment they do that and they find out that you are someone that listens.
Yeah.
And not just wanting to judge the matter or give a solution immediately. They'll tell you more. And at that moment, you get to really find out. So if it's not a session per se,
yeah,
you wouldn't see me writing anything. I'll just sit down and listen to you. And when you're done, I can recall almost everything. And I just pour it back to you and help you see how you could go through them. And that's how we go.
You're actually helping them to find their own solutions, for them to air it and to kind of see, you know, together, see what's happening, not trying to give them solutions, not trying to judge, yeah, just getting them to air it.
Yes.
I'm thinking a lot of things, and I'm thinking, not every, I mean, you're very open. Some people are open. Some people accept, I think, coming from the premise that, look, we all have problems. What's the big deal? You know, that's a very comfortable position to come from. And that's really helpful. If you're like, you know, what's the big deal? You can trust somebody who's got a good head on their shoulders. Open it out. There's a lot of relief in having that approach, because it means you alleviate the burden that is you're solely carrying. You kind of minimize this kind of paranoia that kind of when things are stuck in here, and you know, stories are being told, and it's convoluted. Truth and reality becomes merged. It's a big relief to have a very relaxed attitude. Like, you know what, big deal. Everyone has problems, and you know, there's no problem that somebody hasn't had. Let me find the person I can talk to. You may already have it. How do you cope with people or an element of culture where people feel, you know, you have to keep everything under the carpet? Vulnerability is weakness. People will use this information to manipulate you, the power of you, this paranoia, this fear, this cultural taboo against just, you know, expressing challenges, expressing problems, and expressing weakness. How, to what extent have you come across that, and how have you dealt with it, or how do you deal with it?
Okay, so I've come across things like this because it's something that is echoed every day. Oh, don't say too much of what is happening to you. Walls have ears and all that. But one thing I often say is there really a secret? Is there really nobody that knows about what someone is going through? Or is there anything new under the sun? So I use the last part to help people see that you're not going through the most, but you are holding back too much information that wouldn't allow you to get solutions. Your solution might just be a word away. If you sift through your social structure and the people around you, you will know who is good or who isn't. You will know who you've said something really light to. You heard it in a third person's mouth. You will know people who you have always been able to confide in and it was safe.
Yeah.
So why don't you explore those people that you feel safe with?
Yeah.
So I'm not always in a hurry to say, speak to me, I'm a therapist. Okay, now get to know me. I don't even want to first barge into you and be in your space and in your face telling you why I think this is that. I want you to see that, okay, first of all, are you meeting a good person? Can this person handle what you are bringing? Because if you allow the society to determine these things, the society is not going to care when you fall apart. The society is basically going to judge you. You could have handled this thing better. Why are you acting like a CC? Why are you doing this? Especially amongst the male folks, it's more rampant. People tell you things like, oh no, you can't be doing this kind of stuff. Like, how can you be dealing with this guy? How can you as a man cry? What are you crying for? You're a man. You don't cry. You don't show weakness. I have to tell people consistently, I have to remind them, you are a human being.
Yeah.
You are first and foremost a human being. And God did not say you couldn't cry. Jesus cried, for instance. So if you have to cry, if you have to express yourself, please do. It would help everybody. It would help with the challenges we face, because a lot of bottled up problems play out in different scenarios we see in life. People get so fed up of life, take up a gun, kill people, mass shootings, join a group where they can explode something. So if you don't create this avenue for them to talk, the society will still be the one to blame them when they lash out. So I always tell you, just say it. It's not going to hurt. Yes, I might feel this person will. I don't care, really. I'm one person that really doesn't care about what people say. So if I say something to you, you are not the only person that has that information, basically.
Yes.
That's how I treat things. You're not the person. So you can't use it to hurt me. And that thing has helped me through life. So nothing you say will really rile me up. And like, you know, hello, someone else knows. So just calm yourself down. Because I have people I confide in, and I have some people that I use my own experience to teach. So they know. And I can't act like, oh, so you know something really special. No, you don't. So I think people should just learn to find that balance where they can say, for real, this thing is not worth me bottling up. I should tell someone, probably I'll get a solution. And you might.
Yes. I think that's really, really important. Anita has just joined us, you know, so I think she'll also have some questions.
Hi, Anita.
Yeah, she's just...
Hi.
Hi, Anita, how are you?
Good. Fine, thank you.
Good to have you with us. We're getting some traction going here. So I think what you were just mentioning about people manifesting the physical turmoil externally, I think there's an issue with people not connecting external events that happen. It's things are coming from somewhere and they build up over time. I don't know, something happens and people just say, why did the person do this? It started from someone's internal state of being.
Yes, true.
Gradually over time. And that's going to take me to one of the questions I want us to delve. I want us to really go through this issue sort of systematically. A lot of what we're talking about is perspective. Yeah, so let's start there. We're talking about developing a 360 perspective on life. What is perspective? What is your definition of perspective?
Okay, so easy said, it's like a person's attitude towards stuff, your point of view.
Yes.
How do you interpret things around you? So you build your perspectives based on, say, nature or nurture, which is the roots for everybody's living. You either learn things from nature, which is your environment and all that, or from your upbringing. So your perspective are built from either of these two things: how you relate with your environment, how you relate with people around you, your family, and people you care about. So that's perspective, in my view.
Yeah. So it's the way they're looking at the world. You know, how they see the angle from which they see the world. You know.
Yes.
What do you think? Because this whole 360, developing a 360 perspective on life. If we take an image, we take try and draw a physical image of somebody standing in the middle of a circle, and they're able to spin around in the center. They're sitting on a wheelie chair in the middle, and they're able to spin around and see there's lots of different, you know, different
views,
lots of different positions that you can, aspects that you need to take into consideration to get a full view. And then based on that full view, you can have a more informed way of thinking and acting, yeah? And that's when sometimes you have a situation where you say, look, let's put things in perspective. When you're talking to somebody, this is a scenario, you know, you put all the different players on the board. Let's say we're playing a chess game. This person is here, that person is there, this person said that. I want to know, what do you think helps people to put things into perspective? Because we're all in our own world. We all have our own view. We all have our own backdrop. We all have our own story and nurturing, and all these things influence us. And you're saying, look, you're helping to get people to develop a 360. What helps people to put things into perspective?
Okay, so I have tried to look at other therapists' views about dealing with perspectives. About 13 stood out to me. And there are things we actually don't put a label to, but we find out we do them every day, right? So I kind of scribbled down a few of these things to help us see how to deal with our perspectives. Number one was thinking beyond the moment. So everything that happens to us at a particular moment. But if you ask yourself the question, in a year's time, would I remember this thing as something that worried me so bad? Mm-hmm. You will probably say that, oh, for real, this thing I'm really troubled about, if I go further, just a bit further, a week further, a month further, I might not remember this thing. Mm-hmm. So yes, not to downplay any of our worries, not to downplay our challenges in life. Mm-hmm. Think about what that thing is doing to you and how it will impact your next week, your next month, next year. If it's not going to be there in your view next year, why are you so bothered about it, mm-hmm. right? That's the very first thing one needs to do. Number two is be that person who is able to actually have a change of, like, you have to learn that you can not change your perspective without changing the way you see that thing. How do I mean? So you are dealing with a negative environment. Maybe you are living with someone and the person keeps pushing you down or making you feel less of yourself. There's something I always say to people, try and put a timeline to that thing. Mm. Try and tell yourself, okay, how long do I think I'll be able to get out of this? How long will I be able to find my own space, for instance? The moment you do that, it puts things in perspective. Oh, I will deal with this person for the next 10 months. Even the same thing with employers. Oh, I will have to deal with this person for the next 3 months. So it helps you build some bit of strength in your mind that, okay, this is for a timeline. And the moment I do all I need to do to move me from here, I will no longer be challenged by that person.
Yes.
Your perspective will totally just switch.
Yes.
Do you get that?
Yes.
Okay, so the next thing is, don't treat your monologues as facts. I know on our first introductory talk, we said people have narratives in their minds.
Yes.
People have ideas. People have arguments in their minds.
Yes.
So those monologues sometimes are not the most genuine things. They're just things based on your own personal inclination.
Yeah.
So if you treat them as facts, most times you will think you are always right. You will think, oh, every other person is a negative person. I'm the only positive person. But if you see that those monologues are not always right, it allows you to change your perspective. It allows you to switch things over.
Yeah.
The fourth one is name your emotion. Yes, please do.
We're going through these steps and they're very important. And I want us to hang on to that.
Okay.
About the narratives in the head, and this is really fascinating. They're always negative, aren't they? There's never been a negative. You know, this the voice in the head. Isn't it almost always negative? Almost.
When I think it's all based on how you've trained your mind.
Yeah.
Okay, so most times negative things trend.
Yeah.
So it's easy for people to quickly speak of negative things, think of negative things, think of how things did not work, think of how the society is really bad and depressing and all that.
Yeah.
So if you keep your mind in that circle,
yeah,
there's every tendency for you to always think negatively and have negative monologues in your mind. So someone does things like this, someone does something that doesn't go well with you and you're like, that's how everybody treats me. They are really so negative towards me. Maybe they don't like me. Maybe they feel I am less of a human. Maybe, and you start giving yourself more negative vibes to actualize those things you already hold in your mind.
Yeah.
But you forget also that, okay, what if the person is having a bad day? Whatever the person is going through a challenge with, maybe his sibling or his parents being sick, what if the person has someone hospitalized and that's the only way the person can express him or herself at that point? That changes your monologue.
Yeah.
But if you don't put that, you just think, no, everybody hates me.
Yeah, exactly. And then the other point is, I think, bearing in mind why your mind, if there's a decision you need to make or there's a setting or scenario, I think it's worth considering the reality of your mind might choose to focus on some negative things because of survival. I think there's an inbred element of survival instinct from our forefathers, foresting and, you know, harvesting and foresting, of having to be on alert. So I think the mind is naturally trying to protect you, but it can also, it's also be wrong. So I think when the negative stuff kicks in, bearing in mind, okay, my mind is trying to protect me, but that's not necessarily true. Okay. So putting it, not giving it too much power, just saying, yeah, my mind has come again with this paranoia and that person looked at me like this, so maybe they're trying to take my back. You know, this goes off, doesn't it? No.
Yes.
No basis for it at all. We just think, okay, that's just my yes, one has to be careful. My mind is possibly also just creating its own thing. Let's just stay balanced.
You know? Yes, you've spoken right. That's very true. Yeah. Very true. Okay, so... do I have a question to answer now?
No, you don't. I had interrupted you on the whole narrative.
Okay.
We're moving on to step number 3 or 4, I believe.
Number 4. Okay, so number 4 is name your emotion.
Right.
Okay, so if you label something, mm-hmm. most times you will find a solution to it. Or most times you will be able to research it and say, okay, what am I feeling? Say, for instance, you are having a forthcoming examination or some assessment, and you feel a churning tummy, your head begins to feel woozy, your palm begins to sweat unnecessarily, you become a bit pensive.
Yeah.
Those are feelings, those are like symptoms of a specific thing. So the moment you are able to say, oh, I might be afraid, oh, I might be agitated, oh, I might really be excited, you will know what you're dealing with. And the moment you know what you're dealing with, you will be able to handle it. You'll be able to seek solutions for that thing. So take, for instance, you have an exam and you're having all those feelings. If you label it and say, I'm afraid, what are you afraid of? I'm probably afraid of messing it up or failing. That allows you to tell yourself, oh, for real, the fear is about this particular event.
Yes.
And the moment you can tape that thing down, you will now say, okay, either I prepare much more, or I believe in the fact that this is not my first exam, this is not my first rodeo. So I've done this before and I will do it again. And I think I'll come out right. So you have to label that thing so that it's clear to you that what I'm feeling, I'm not feeling something out of the blues. The world is not conspiring against me. No evil force is really against me to hurt me. John, you get that.
Mm-hmm.
So we need to label those things. And the moment you label them, they lose their strength on us.
Yes. I think that is a fantastic point. This is it, isn't it? The power of defining terms. The power of, you know, I don't know, consolidating thoughts and defining it into a term and a word, the power of language, the power of words. As you say, there's so much fear and uncertainty and ambiguity. You know, there's no sense of there's nothing solid there. I don't know what's going on. It's all over the place.
Yes. Yes.
The words that enable you to be able to put things into an order and to create a science out of it, and to be able to hold, okay, this is what it is. What can I do about it? I can move it here, I can do it there, I can dilute it, I can intensify it, I can put it to the side, I can pour, you know. It's this, it's incredible, and it's an amazing power, because, and the other thing, the clarity of thought, you know, the problem, the situation is still there, but because, and you find that, I think what I find incredible about what you just said, there's some times when something, a situation is happening and you don't know what that is. It's not in your vocabulary.
Mm.
Not only is it not in your vocabulary, you have not come across a cat before. It's not that you say, oh, I haven't seen a cat, but I know a cat. It's like, I've never seen a cat, so I can't even tell you that that's a cat.
Yes.
And then somebody comes along and says, oh, this is a cat. And you're like, oh, what do they do? And once you know how it behaves, you may still have a bit of fear of the cat and everything, but you actually have a grasp of it.
Of what, yes.
And
yes.
That eases the mind, this certainty and lack of ambiguity. You know, the fear. Fear is a lot of ignorance and uncertainty, isn't it?
It is. It is. It certainly is.
And the confusion and kind of anarchic behavior that is just with no order. It's a lot of the time from lack of knowledge and understanding.
Mm. Yeah.
I mean, for me, this is a very, very powerful point. I've personally found that really empowering when I've been able to define things, especially, you know, emotional terminology that you may not come across in everyday life.
Every day, yes.
If it's not your field, but if someone says, oh, no, that's called that, and this is how it manifests, and it's very common, and it's, oh, right, okay, suddenly.
You get that, oh. So this is how it's dealt with. Take for instance, people were having the dry cough. People were having a bump up in their temperature. All the symptoms of COVID, but nobody could name what COVID was. You would start diagnosing all sorts of things, right? So the moment they put a name to it, oh, this is how it mutates. This is how it works. This is how you can now deal with it.
Yeah.
So that's basically how this thing works. Yeah. If you put a name to it, you'll probably be able to find some bit of insight. Yeah. Oh, okay, how do they deal with these things? Probably Google how one deals with this. And then you find out, oh, so this is how this happened. This is how people feel when they do this.
Yes.
So it, I think it helps a lot.
Yeah.
It helps a lot.
And this is, for me, I mean, just getting a bit philosophical here, this is the advantage of the human being. This higher consciousness, higher intellectual ability, the power of speech. I think if the human being has that, we really need to maximize, because it's very powerful. Seeking knowledge, understanding the terminology, delving into things, analyzing, and then using it practically to help improve. Recognizing that actually there's a science in life. You can actually understand most things, you know?
Yes.
And you can try and help yourself by understanding it. And even if you can't do something about it, just understanding it alleviates half of the stress, I think.
It does. You know, it does.
In the animal kingdom, the human being has that ability.
You're right.
This is a very powerful thing, and we shouldn't just be like, oh, I don't know what to do. No, you can find out. You can start researching. You can start asking people. You can get to the crux of it. You take a very proactive, positive approach. This is what your practice, this is what you're facilitating with people. And I think it's actually key, you know?
Yes, it is.
Yeah.
It is. Okay. So the fifth one is flip the script on the emotion you have labeled. Mm-hmm. And flipping the script is, okay, so I'm feeling this certain thing. Is it my first time? Mm-hmm. What's the alternative to this thing? How do I solve it?
Right.
Those questions raise your awareness of dealing with that thing. Mm-hmm. Okay, so I'm scared of what my parents will do, for instance, because I have something negative that has happened that they don't know of. Okay. That's a feeling that comes with several symptoms. Mm-hmm. The moment you label it and say, okay, I'm afraid of them, you ask yourself the obvious question, what's the worst thing they've done to me in a situation similar to this? Okay. Are they the kind of people that will overreact? Are they the kind of people that will just, okay, come in, let me show you how to do it better? Mm. Those things help you to understand what next to do. Mm-hmm. And if it's not your first rodeo, you will just remind yourself, I did not die the first time this thing happened.
Yeah.
And I'm sure I'm not the first person making this sort of mistake. Mm-hmm. If you can do those things to yourself, it might not be something even related to other people. It might not even be for an external person. It might be something happening within you. The moment you know what that thing is and you're able to tell yourself the alternate facts behind that thing you're feeling, you suddenly feel that, oh, there is a solution to this. Okay, you need money for a certain thing. What do you need? You need a job. You need something extra to come in. You need help. So the moment you have named what the problem is, you know what you should look out for. You're no longer searching for the obvious negative. I think my screen is about to turn around. Okay, so it's important that we learn to flip things around for ourselves. It helps us to go through life more easily. Yeah. That's the fifth one. The sixth one is remind yourself you've done it before, which is just like, and this is not your first rodeo. I've done this thing before. I have felt this way before. Nothing is new under the sun. I will get through this. So if for instance, someone falls ill,
yes,
and you are thinking, oh, it's so bad. I'm in a bad space. Probably it's even something contagious. Everybody is avoiding you. You now begin to feel worse that, oh, I could make someone sick. My mere presence could do this or that or harm someone I love and all that. If you remind yourself quickly that, oh, this thing that I'm going through, it's not the first illness I've had to deal with. If you quickly remind yourself that I've been through worse and survived it this far. Yeah, this is something, this is a new curve. But I'm sure that if I am resilient enough, I will make it through.
Yeah.
When you do that, it just switches things for you. It helps your perspective to turn. And if you can turn your perspective, I think you are halfway through your solutions already.
Yeah.
The next one is practice the five whys. Okay, so these whys, I've all these whys because they help me to diffuse situations.
Yes.
So the whys help me to diffuse situations. They are all whys. So the first why is, why am I angry? Mm-hmm. Or for instance, if I'm angry, if the emotion I'm feeling is angry, why am I afraid, for instance? So you ask yourself the question, I'm going to use anger to explain this. So why am I angry? Maybe someone cut me off in traffic.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm angry. I'm offended that, why would someone drive so silly on the road? I was supposed to be heading my way and then you just cut me off and I almost had an accident because of your negligence. If you ask yourself that question, the obvious answer will be that they were careless or they were rushing.
Yeah.
All right. So why might they have done that thing to me will bring the answer they were rushing somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
So the first why helps me know they did this thing and it's totally wrong and unacceptable to me.
Yeah.
The next why tells you, okay, why have they done this? Can you give an explanation for them acting this way? So they were rushing. Okay, so if they are rushing, why does that affect me? The next question is, why do people have to rush? Why do people have to do things that put them in this mad rush? If you answer that question with, oh, okay, sometimes things happen that you are not in control of. Probably a child falls sick from school and then you are called. You need to show up in this hospital or that hospital or something, or someone gets rushed to the hospital. You probably are not thinking straight. Something happens that just takes your mind to from 0 to 100 in like 10 seconds. You want to get there the fastest. You want to do the most. That might be an action that you might regret if you don't learn to calm down.
Yeah.
I'm talking from the other person's perspective. But now, if you as a person having the anger for being caught up in traffic, if you have that explanation that, oh, probably this person is rushing to take care of someone in the ER, maybe the person has been called to rescue a situation, or maybe the person just wants to go to the toilet.
Yes.
Sometimes you might have that serious urge and you need to get there fast. You're not thinking straight. So if you give yourself those answers, it begins to change things around. You begin to understand that, oh, this person doesn't just hate me. This person is not just a foul person. This person probably just has a problem with something he couldn't control or she couldn't control. Another thing that is very important is sometimes it might be their own negligence. It might be that they did not plan properly.
Yes.
But if you at least answer your why they did those things and how you felt about them, you will be able to deal with what emotion you are feeling towards them. The fourth why is, why am I angry at someone if they are handling or dealing with a situation they can't control? Mm. Yeah, so they are dealing with something they just have to deal with. They don't have help. They are the only people that have to run to the rescue of this person. Why do I need to be offended at them, knowing that they might just be going through something totally unthinkable or something they never planned for in the day? Yeah. And the fifth one is, why do I perceive someone possibly experiencing any of these things as being rude or inconsiderate?
Yeah. Yeah.
If you get to that point and answer it in such a way as to diffuse the situation, you are going to solve the matter you are feeling, the anger you're feeling, because you now ask yourself, okay, so I have thought through these processes. Imagine this person's wife is almost gone. Mm-hmm. And he has to rush to say his last words or do something. And you are angry at that person. Is it worth it at the end of the day? If it's not worth it, you just let go of your anger. Mm-hmm. So if you practice that for emotions you are feeling, mm-hmm. or your perspectives in life, you will most likely be able to handle every situation you face, because you ask yourself, why am I feeling this way? Could this thing have been handled a bit differently? Okay, why is this person doing this? Why did this person talk down at me? Did I do something to cause it? Did I talk out of line? Did I insult him first or her first and all that? When you think through those whys, your problems are almost out of the door. And it helps you to change your perspective.
Yeah.
The next one is, do you have a question?
I do, actually. My mind is spinning.
Okay.
I'm thinking a couple of things. I'm thinking about generally having an approach of giving people the benefit of the doubt, which makes
a lot.
You know, it just say, look, generally most people are good people. Generally most people are nice and kind. Sometimes we're all ignorant about certain things. Sometimes, as you said, we're all in a rush. Sometimes an emergency. Sometimes we didn't even realize that that was inappropriate. You know, otherwise, if people had a high level of consciousness at all times, certain things just wouldn't happen. If they knew better, but just even if it's something that they really shouldn't have done, just give people the benefit of the doubt. Just like, look, they didn't realize, whatever, it's gone. Why would I be giving myself high blood pressure over this? You know what I mean? If you're someone who's conscious of your health and you're like, you know,
yes,
it's not right. And if I have a chance, I'll talk to them. But I'm not going to wind myself up because I don't want to be sick, you know, long term. But also, I want you to just maybe buttress this kind of judge. And I feel like the judge, the external judge is a mirror of the internal judge.
Mm-hmm.
This constant castigating and telling other people off and one, you know, why didn't they do this pointing, constant pointing fingers. I feel like it's because it's an internal thing going on there. There's something internal. There's a harsh judge inside.
Yeah.
A harsh judge coming from inside sometimes. Because some people are always angry. You know, you see some people, they will just, whatever. And there's obviously, somebody else will be like, well, you know, whatever. Or maybe somebody else will just say, that person's just crazy. And they'll drive on and they're not really that bothered. You know, or if they, it was almost a crash. Yes, you'll be angry. Like, what's wrong with this person? But as they drive on, they're like, oh, wow, when everybody's stressed. Where is the, quite often, can you explain where the anger is coming from or being stored or not acknowledged? Or can you just that a little bit?
Okay. So there's something we call, I think it's termed in three phases, the id impulse, the ego, and the super ego. Yeah. So many times people are trapped in the id. The id are your obvious relations, your obvious reactions to stuff. What impulse will you feel when you are eat? I want to ravage anything. Anything I see as food, I will eat. You're feeling sleepy. Oh, I must sleep right now. Your id impulse wants to get satisfied right now. The same thing with anger. When you are feeling when someone does something to you, because you hold yourself to such high standards, you feel, oh, I wouldn't do such a thing to somebody. Then someone does that thing to you, your first reaction will be, why did this person act this way? I wouldn't act this way to other people. Take, for instance, if you are someone who doesn't ask for help, if you're someone who always solves your own problem, it becomes a problem when other people see you as a solution. You begin to ask yourself, oh, but I don't ask you for help. And how come it's only me you keep asking for help? Now, the inner impulse is that thing that makes you always want to judge, oh, this person is not doing this thing right. I think I would have done it better. I think this is how I would have. But if you put yourself in check, so we have the superego, which holds you to unnecessarily high standards or things that are unachievable based on your, take for instance, someone who has, who is phobic of dirt, doesn't like dirt in his environment. Such person will probably feel awkward in the presence of someone who talks kind of, who talks in, who speaks while talking.
Okay.
Right? So such person will want to distance himself because everything feels, oh, this person is about to just do something that I'm really going to hate. Now, if you are in the presence of someone like that, that person can be defined as your super ego who feels that, no, nobody should be dirty around me. No dirt should be dropped in my environment. You shouldn't even walk with the slippers or shoe you took outside into an environment. Now, the balance is the ego. The balance is that part of you that says, okay, so guys, calm down. You are asking for too much because you are doing things that people naturally can't do. People can't handle these things.
Yeah.
Secondly, you are asking for things that are irrational. Why do you have to react consistently negative about things that you know you can handle?
Yeah.
So there's something I always say to adults. This happens amongst parents, more especially. Because parents probably grew up in environments where people, their own parents taught them the hard way. Their own parents were really very firm. They forget that kids are learning and kids don't know everything. As much as kids try to act like they are very smart, kids don't know everything. So the parents, in trying to let these kids know or think through their own process, they often make the mistake of maybe backing down orders or shouting. And like you said earlier, why do you want to have a high blood pressure for something that is as minute as it? If you think about things in their smallest forms, you wouldn't have issues with them. But because we aggrandize every issue, everything, we blow things beyond proportion. Oh, someone talk wrong. Oh man, what am I gonna do? I should react. Oh, someone stepped on me. Oh, I should, oh God, my Louis Vuitton shoe or something like that. But please ask yourself the question, you get caught after that incident. The words they spoke, did it kill you? Did you feel less of a human forever? Yes, they might affect you temporarily. Those things might come to rub off on you negatively some way. But if you learn that, see, this person is just relating to me based on their own knowledge. If they knew better, they would probably do better. It would help you to see that these things you are dealing with, no matter how difficult they are solvable. So you shouldn't react consistently to things.
Yeah.
You shouldn't react negatively to things. You just take yourself into perspective and ask yourself, does this thing benefit me in any way? Am I better off reacting? Am I better off fighting this person? Am I better off judging this person? If you're not better off doing any of these things, why do them?
Yeah.
So I hope I answered the question with that.
Absolutely. I mean, I think ego is one of the things I wanted to it's actually one of the last points I wanted to get to, but it's such a prominent point. I mean, I just want to, before the thought goes, just delve into something a bit deeper. I mean, I'm as you're talking, I'm thinking, I think ego has a lot to do with how one reacts, even one's perspective on life. You know, it really does. I'm thinking, but I think I'll ask you that maybe later, as in how one trains the ego. But the question the issue I'm wanting to think about now is, you see, that for me, ego manifests itself in two ways, but both of them come down to being a bit narcissistic. I mean, narcissistic is a strong word, and I don't mean it in a very strong condemnatory way. I'm just using it as a term. So if somebody has a lot of insecurities, oh, they didn't do this, it's still all about me, right?
Oh, yep.
other chicken and that, but oh yeah, I'm not gonna. So, me. If you look at all the pronouns that they use, it's all me, I, treat me.
Personalized, yeah.
And it's not really, but it's not what you consider. When people think about ego, they think of somebody who's very, you know, OTT, arrogant. Who you're talking to, you know, that famous line, you know?
Yeah.
That's the whole aggrandized over. That's the one extreme. Both extremes of it are still ego-based. It's all about you. And then maybe later in that, how one trains the ego to say, hey, it's not
always about you.
It's almost never about you. Who has the time?
Yeah.
So, I mean, we'll come to that. It was just a thought where there's two different strands of that, but they still come down to the same thinking too much of yourself.
Yourself, yeah.
Absolutely. Okay. I'll let you go. Yeah.
Okay. So I'll continue with get up and run, or get up and move.
Yeah.
That's the next point. So just sometimes changing your environment helps you to take things differently. So you've heard of people saying, okay, I'm going to go on a retreat to think about this, to think differently about business, to get stuff done, to just get your mind out of that space that is really cramping you. So getting up and just moving is one thing that helps a lot of people. So that's the eighth point. Thinking about the best case scenario. What's the best case scenario in this matter? So if you give me, for instance, an example of, someone does this thing, your most likely reaction should be, what's the worst case scenario? But if you think from the perspective of what's the best case scenario that could explain this or that could help with this, always thinking about what better way to do things would help you than thinking about the negatives. So we're trying to teach people to stop putting their minds to negatives, to stop thinking about themselves only.
Yeah.
You get worked up by everything around you if you are consistently thinking about yourself. Yeah. So having that thought of what's the best thing that can happen from this, even things that, like, people ask questions like, when is the best time to distance yourself from someone who is totally negative towards you? You might think to yourself, well, I don't want to be alone. I like their presence, or I like to hang out with this person or this group of people. But if you think about what's the best thing that could happen to you in your health if you don't have these people as a challenge to you consistently, what's the best thing that could happen to me if I left this relationship, whatever kind of relationship? What's the best thing that could happen? I've met people that say the people that give them the most negative vibes are their parents, are their family members. So it's one of the most difficult things. If, for instance, it's friends, you can change your group of friends. But can you change your bloodline? Can you change your family? No. So how do you deal with people who consistently push you down, but they're the people that you care the most or should care the most about you? Handling that is a totally different thing. So what's the best thing that can come out from all they're saying? One thing I teach young people is this. You might necessarily not understand your parents until you are a parent. You would never really be able to understand why they reacted the way they did. Sometimes you think, what's the fuss about? Like, this thing, no cute person. Why are you making such a fuss about this thing? But it's only when you turn into a parent, or when you become a parent, that you will know, sure, that these things are more deep than I see them.
Yeah.
So putting yourself in other people's shoes just helps you sometimes. It just helps you to see things quite differently. How is this person feeling? So if a parent asks me to speak to a child about stuff, the obvious wrong way is to take the side of a parent and tell the child you are wrong. Okay, wait, child, tell me what you are feeling in this moment. What were you thinking? Why did you feel this was the best way to react about this thing or to deal with this thing? Okay, what if you thought about it this way? And give more views of things that could happen, mistakes that could have been made, what it could have resulted in. Oh, okay. They begin to see things quite differently. So what's the best thing that could come out is one question we need to keep asking ourselves. What can I do differently? Oh, if I did this, I will benefit somehow from this action. So do I do it? Yes, I'll do it. Or no, I wouldn't. And the next one is talking it out, which is something we've said over and over. Talking it out.
That's a big one. How easy is it to put yourself in shoes if you haven't even walked in shoes before yourself? What even kind of shoes for shoe?
Okay, so putting yourself in someone else's shoes is as easy as asking yourself, what's this person feeling now? What's this person feeling? Why is this person relating to me this way? If I've never met someone and the person acts all wrong to me, two things start to happen in my mind. Number one is, does this person really know me? Isn't this person judging me wrongly? Should I not be offended in this person? Like, how dare you talk to me like that? You've not met me and you're already judging me, or you're already acting like you own me. Number two is, oh, okay. Why is this person relating to me this way? Maybe this person is having a really bad day. Maybe this person is used to being the boss. Everybody answers to him or her and feels he can bring that same vibe into my room. The moment you do that, you have already started to say to yourself, probably this person is relating to me this way because of be it the positive or the negative sides. If you put that into perspective, you can now tell yourself the narrative that helps you to deal with it. And I'm not going to tell you that you will always be judged right by your actions. Take, for instance, someone called me for a business deal and said to me, oh, it was just going off the handle, saying things that didn't really make sense to me and hasn't met me. But I later found out that he was doing that because he had requested for someone totally different for that particular job. But that person said, okay, I'm going to send you who you are asking for, but I know someone who can do this thing much better. So in his mind, he was doing me a favor. In his mind, because that person told him to try me out, I probably might not be good. I probably might be someone who is trying to help his business.
Right.
So my first reaction was, does this guy really know who I am? But then I asked myself the question after I found out, because I just immediately messaged that person. Who's this person? Why is this person talking like this? And the person now explained to me. That allowed me to know that he's behaving this way because he thinks I am not that person he wanted initially. He feels, oh, he could get a better deal with a bigger name in the industry. That helped me to just diffuse the situation. I know that it's a small fish to fry. It's either I don't do this deal if he cannot go with my terms.
Yeah.
So it's just as easy as finding out, why is this person behaving this way? Sometimes ask the person some questions that help you understand what they are going through. Okay, so sir, wait, explain this to me. If the person is obviously negative, I would beg you, just move yourself away from that zone because you don't need such people. There's no need for you to try and accommodate people because you are a loving and caring person and the people just keep pulling you down. There's no need for that. It's good for you to save your space and your brain and your mind.
Yeah.
People say mind over matter. Yes. Let your mind be safe first before the matter will come and crop in and destroy you. Because things we do, I've seen someone who suffered a heartbreak and actually ended up in the hospital. A young boy in university, someone just said, after he had been dating for a while, the person just said, I wasn't doing, and said it in the most nasty way. This boy actually felt like his heart was choked and then landed in a hospital. So if you are not consistently guiding your space, there's every tendency that those things you are not guiding yourself from will hurt you. So I'm not saying love everybody and just accept all the rubbish they do. I'm rather saying protect yourself while being a human being, while still being humane to everybody around you.
Yeah. So you were going on with the points.
Okay. So meditate regularly. So just having those mind walks where you can actually just sit down and not grovel about the obvious negatives, but think about opportunities that could come out from this thing. It doesn't have to be a spiritual exercise. It's just you thinking, sitting in the quietude of your mind and exploring alternatives would help. The next one is be creative. If you'll find out that people who engage in activities as little as maybe singing, dancing, unwinding in a specific way,
yes,
will be able to deal with difficult situations better. If there's no way for you to unwind, if you think, oh, life is so difficult in itself, I don't even need that space to think, I just want to be sorrowing or wallowing in my sorrowful state. Oh, fine. That's what you will get.
Yeah.
But when you're creative with dealing with situations, I'm a photographer, for instance. So if I'm feeling down about a certain thing, I probably just carry my camera and walk into an unknown space and create something.
Yeah.
It will suddenly just pump a new life into me. I'll just see things. Oh, wow, this is beautiful. So this is how beautiful life can be. And I'm almost killing myself.
Yeah.
Right. So if you think creatively, it would help you deal with and change your perspective with stuff. The last, and which will be the first actually, is talk to a therapist.
Yes.
But I put it at the last one, so it doesn't look like I'm trying to reach, but it's talk to a therapist. Just let them help you see.
Yes.
Let them help you from a non-judgmental perspective, see things.
Yeah.
Help you navigate your emotions.
Yeah.
And then you would have dealt successfully.
Yeah, that's fantastic. That's a very, very good framework. Absolutely. I think what I also like about what you said with regards to doing other energizing activities that are completely different to your, you know, the kind of the challenging work you have at hand, is for me, it's not putting all your eggs in one basket, you know? So you've got different components that are worthy of your attention in life. Sometimes people just focus on their work. Or
yes,
their chores, it's their work or their house chores or their family chores. And all of them are just kind of draining the battery, you know? But I think one has to just make sure you're recognizing that you actually need to charge the battery and what are the things I need to do to charge my battery. And that's different for different people. Some people listen to lectures. I think sports and exercise in whatever form is good for everybody, but everybody is different. Some people do it, some people don't. Say I'm naturally active, I don't need it or whatever. As you said, creativity, you know, whether it's music, photography, art, but you also find that when you kind of have the different outlets,
yes,
sure, that particular problem is proportionate. It doesn't become the focus in your life. And because it's not the focus on the page, there's a bit more space around the issue to even see it clearly. So you find that you move away from that issue. If you go for a walk, or you do this, or you do that activity, or you're volunteering here, or you're doing your NGO stuff, sometimes you just get an idea and just think, oh, let me just call so-and-so. Didn't they have this situation? You know, you find because you've got the mental space, the idea, problem-solving ideas are actually more moving clear, and they can actually see clearly. And you start trying so many different aspects that really helps. Even though a lot of times you're like, no, I have to stay at my desk. I must finish this
thing before I move.
I will not sleep today. And then you're just like, no, you know how much you decide that today not today, you know. But if you say, look, let me do an hour and a half, and then let me go and do some other things and come back to this. It's not going to kill, you know.
Yeah.
You find one, you're more effective, you're faster, you find a solution. You may not even have to do as much work because you found a way to maybe even delegate or a way to fast track it. I just think that that's a really invaluable piece of the tip that you've just provided. It's very, very powerful.
Thank you very much.
But would you admit that culturally we're not really, I hate to generalize, but I'm just putting it out. Would you say generally, culturally, sometimes we're not encouraged to take breaks? Is that something, whether it's the break or it's time for, just to say that break time is as important as work time, really?
What? Yes.
Because in some
you cultures, are right.
Cooking with breaks. So in some cultures, it's like, no, it's coffee time, break time, let me go and get my coffee. And they realize that the brain relaxes, you have a quick 20-minute coffee break, and then you're back to work. Lunch
yes.
is summer holiday. Even if you don't travel, let's have this weekend, let's go here. It doesn't have to involve expense or this weekend, nobody's working, laptops are off, let's play board games. You don't have to, I'm not saying you have to buy a ticket, put petrol in your car, drive somewhere, pay hotel. You don't have to do, you can just mentally say, this is our break time, we're doing board games, we're going for walks in the neighborhood, we're having, having some food with people, where you're actually switching off, however you switch off. And it doesn't have to involve money, it doesn't have to involve remoteness.
Yes.
Do you think, as a culture, this is something we're not taking so seriously?
Yes. I've worked in several places before I started my own business. And I found out that that thing only exists in paper, the break time. For most companies, they say it but never really encourage it. They don't even create their venue for you to take those breaks. So I think as a culture, we need to really, really center our minds on making this happen, because we are building people who are heading towards a burnout. They're just a moment away from a burnout. I have to tell myself deliberately, the world will not end without you.
Yeah.
You will not solve everything. Just move on. So I think it's something we need to keep preaching to people, or keep telling people that, see, take breaks. Just take out time to unwind. Take out time to not necessarily do the work, but it doesn't necessarily have to also incur a cost.
Yeah.
Just turning off your system. There are some, I've recently been able to do something. While the work is happening, I am one person that wants to finish it up and close my system. I wouldn't touch the system as long as there is nothing to do. I wouldn't be, let me quickly edit this. No, I'm not going to edit anything. I want to rest. So the system is there. I'm just going to have peace of mind. I remind myself of that, because if you're always trying to solve everybody's challenge, or always trying to be the best employee, when it hits the fan and the worst happens, you'll find out that they move so fast.
Yeah.
The society environment moves fast without you.
Yeah.
So why kill yourself over something that you needed to have some rest? So I think we should keep telling people, take some break, take some rest. It's important. At least I saw that play out in my own personal life. My father, there was a point in time he had to do stuff and he felt he needed to be there. And I told him, no, you don't have to. You can delegate this thing. You don't have to consistently push yourself. Why are you pushing yourself? You're a boss.
Yeah.
Let other people do this thing.
Mm.
And there are times he did not listen and eventually saw the repercussion. And it's like, I should have listened. It cost a bit more than he would if he just listened. But the truth is, lessons learned.
Yeah.
Right. So there are things like that we need to just keep telling people. Probably share examples with people. Let people know that these things are important. Some offices are better than some. Some cultures are better than some. But we just need to keep echoing it so people take rest.
Yeah. I think sometimes it also is a personality thing, isn't it? Some personalities.
The A-type people. Always going about the job, always making it happen, always being the best at what they do, but forgetting that their health matters. Yes.
Yeah. And they need to also examine why they're doing that.
Yeah.
There's a couple of things before we wind up. We've already been on for an hour, but just a couple of things before we wind up. There's too much to talk
about.
We have to have part two, don't we?
Okay.
I would like to know about what your views are with regards to what we're talking about, this 360 perspective. Can you talk about the significance of having role models, mentors, and teachers that helped you with this practice, this holistic approach to life, this 360 perspective?
Okay. So it's important to probably stand on the shoulders of people who have done stuff.
Yeah.
That way it's easier for you to navigate those waters. So it's super important to have people who have dealt with these things and know how to handle them. That way you don't need to go through the whole emotion or five stages of this when you already know when or how these things have been handled.
Yeah.
So mentors, very important, very crucial with helping you deal with these things because they can spot it a mile away. They know how it comes up. They know how to deal with such things. So take, for instance, I'll give an instance. For someone who probably has been in several relationships that didn't work out and is someone who thinks more clearly, is not someone who feels everything is because the other person was negative, yeah? Sees his own role and deals with those things. For such person, he'll be able to advise someone else who is going through something similar because he knows I've been there. These are signs you need to look out for. These are things you need to deal with. The same way with people and their perspective. If you are always thinking negative thoughts, you need someone who consistently gasses you up with more positive vibes, who helps you see that there is more to what is happening beyond what you are seeing and what you are explaining of it. So mentors, super important. Everybody that can help you deal with these things without going through the motions of it is important. So I encourage it.
How easy do you think it is for people to find mentors within their own environment or outside their environment? Do you think it's easy? I mean, what is your experience?
Okay, so search, seeking for mentors is something we sometimes do wrong. Yeah. How do I mean? We're always looking for physical mentors. We're always looking for people we think we want them to mentor us. And so we're in people's faces consistently requesting for stuff. I think it's first understanding who mentors are.
Yeah,
I think that's the first thing. Sometimes people mix up mentors with benefactors, I think. So they feel, oh, this person is there and she'll be able to do this for me. Mm-hmm. But that's not who a mentor is. He's a guide. Mm-hmm. So if you are mixing things up, you might not get the mentor. Sometimes you don't even need them in your area. You just need to read a book or two from them. You just need to follow them and see what kind of things they say, the kind of environments they find themselves, what they profess. So I wouldn't say, like, I'm in Nigeria, I'm not going to be saying, oh, I'm going to meet my mentor who is in Europe right now. It might be virtual. It might be something where I just drop a word and the person, oh, fills me back on something else that just lifts me up. So I think looking for physical mentors might be a problem. No thanks to COVID again. We cannot even be in some spaces anymore. So we just have to do things based on what we have available to us. So
yeah,
it might be difficult, but keep your intentions pure and don't expect unnecessary things from people. Everybody's dealing with something.
Yes, I think I like what you said about it can be virtual mentors and it can be even listening to lectures or motivational things or reading. And yeah. I think people need to make it part of their regular daily practice. You know, you need to charge those batteries, get yourself in a positive mindset somehow. You know, so I would say even mornings and evenings personally, I really think people need that kind of space. And it could be 5 minutes, 10 minutes, it doesn't have to be a long time, you know? And there are ways these days with technology one can get that, you know?
Yes.
I think that's absolutely key. There's a question, a couple of questions I have, which I think we need to address before we.
Okay.
It's been amazing. What role do you think faith has to play in all of this, in this 360 perspective on life?
Faith. Okay.
I'm not limiting my definition of faith is quite broad. I mean,
Okay. Explore that for me. Let people know what you are.
So, I mean, I think that there's obviously faith in a supreme being that, you know, knows and sees all, and there's a grand plan, and, you know, this is not the be all and end all. This is a world of challenge and turmoil, and, you know, you will be part of it. It's part of the framework that there will be challenges. So don't take it too seriously. Don't get too immersed. Know that, you know, your creator is there, you know. So there's that element. There's a religious element, and obviously there's various religions have slightly different takes, but essentially I feel say similar things. And then there's the element of somebody who perhaps is not into the religious doesn't have a religious take on things, but has their own type of faith. Maybe they have a belief system that this is the way the world works, things pass, and you have to do this and that. So it's just, I think I'm talking about a conviction. I don't want to limit it because I don't want to leave people out, because I think everybody has some type of, potentially some type of faith in their life. Or can that, having some type of conviction or faith system, can that help you within this 360 perspective approach we're talking about?
Okay, yes. Yes, the answer is yes to that. If you are not an extremist, that's a solution to that. If you're not an extremist, faith really does help, right? But if you go to any of the extremes, be it the positive extreme or the negative extreme, it's going to play a more negative role, because you'll be thinking of things that exist, that don't exist, but trying to make those things be. And eventually it's just going to affect the way you perceive things. It's going to affect the way the world works around you. So if you can learn to put things right in balance, have that balance in life where you can say, for sure, this thing is not affecting me more negatively than the other. My belief in being able to seek help when I am in need, my belief in being able to know that there is some higher being that will take care of this matter and I don't need to worry too much. But leaving those things, leaving everything to uncertainty is not the best way to go. So I believe that if you make plans and then trusting the faith or the belief you or belief system you have, it would work hand in hand to help you achieve those things. But if you just fit solely to that faith structure you have, you'll probably fail at it. So that's my answer to that.
Every effort doctrine, you know, whatever, there's a theory and law. With every, so you as a human being do are been given an intellect, a brain, a mind, everything, your instincts to do everything you can possibly conceive of doing in this situation, and then you don't stress about the brain because you've done everything you can, and you're constantly addressing where you can maneuver. You maneuver, and then you rest. And it's that kind of balance between action and then also faith, in that once I've done my best, then whatever will be in a sense. It makes you I suppose.
Yes, it does.
But recognizing that you have to do the work, you know, you have,
you have, it's important.
That's part of the equation. Thank you for that. I think that's quite important, particularly in the West African context, where faith is a very big part of life, you know, and the context.
To
highlight that, and it also has a very positive role to play. I mean, I'm not, you know, it does have a positive role, but as you say, within when it's in a balance, when it's applied in a balanced way, and also those outside, you know, maybe traditional faith system also have their own faith system that would
help. Yes,
the scientific aspect or a very secular, it can also play its own role. Last but not least, I think in this conversation, you know, you've given us wonderful steps as to how to develop a 360 perspective on life, and it's been really invaluable. I really appreciate your time on that. And there's a lot to reflect on. I think I'll have to watch this interview again. And the last point is what tips do you give viewers on training the ego? Because I'm beginning to distill a lot of this and what you've said, ego has a huge part to play. I don't want to start throwing out percentages, but I don't want to go there actually, because, you know, it's my own, you know, speculation, and I'm thinking actually at the core of a lot of these issues is really training the ego, acknowledging that one has an ego, understanding what the ego is. I mean, you've addressed that. Acknowledging that it has a role and has power, acknowledging that it's almost like a separate part of us. And I kind of like people to take things outside themselves, because you're more able to handle things. Think, oh, there we go, there's the ego going off. You just can't. You know what I mean? It's way more lighthearted, isn't it? It's like a little bit.
Yes.
We all have this. Oh, there we go. My ego is feeling crushed again. Okay, ego, just take it easy. But just so acknowledging that it has a role to play, that it has some kind of, and that one can actually train it. you know.
Yeah.
I'd like you to just, you know, sort of help us to wind down by addressing this.
Okay. Okay, so I'll do something. I'll just define something from a psychoanalytic point of view, first of all. So ego is a part of the mind. Ego is a part of the mind that mediates between the conscious and unconscious and is responsible for reality, feeling, and a sense of personal identity.
Okay, you need to repeat that again. Slowly, I'm listening.
Okay. Okay, so the ego.
I need to translate to my head. I've got Google Translate.
So ego is the part of the mind that means conscious and unconscious, and is responsible for reality testing, and a sense of personal identity.
Okay.
So when we talk about ego, dictionary-wise, we'll say a person's sense of self-esteem. We talk about it from the self-esteem perspective.
Yeah.
So you say that man has an ego. You hear people say the ego, use the ego word every other day. He has an ego. The ego is part of us. It's necessarily a useful part of every human being. If you lack an ego, you won't survive so long because everything will hurt you. Everything will come to crush you.
Yeah.
But with the ego in place, it allows you to balance between things that are happening unconsciously and those things that are happening consciously.
Right.
It helps you to say, okay, is this thing happening to me or for me? Mm-hmm. Is this thing about to affect me or work for my good? Mm. You know, we interpret things pretty in a weird way. An example comes in point. Someone made a post about something that I find a bit worrisome.
Yeah.
And it's something we've been seeing a lot more in this part of the world, in Africa. A lot of times people say things about, they downtrod men who don't already have the financial wherewithal or the money. So people say things like, oh, you're happy till you meet a man who doesn't have money. Or they say things like, wahala for person we no get this and that. So she posted something like that. And I said, I think this narrative should be a bit balanced. Mm. Don't think you should post this. Why? Because it's not as if you don't have any right to catch cruise or be happy with this. But when you keep putting these kind of things out there, people become by seeing. And there's a tendency for them to see these things so often that they begin to feel less of themselves. Mm. Okay. I then made my own posts to just help people see things a little bit differently.
Yeah.
Another day, she made a post about something. So I just commented lightheartedly about something totally different. But she came from this defensive place. And then what? I'm like, oh, no. I'm just trying to say that. I'm just trying to buttress what you're saying. Mm-hmm. That was the ego trying to flip out that, oh, the last time you said, I did not think so deeply about this. And then I made a statement that probably might have hurt people. So now you're trying to say I'm doing such a thing again. I'm like, oh, no, it's not about that. It's just me trying to corroborate what you are saying. I'm trying to say that people can be shitty. People can do stuff that will hurt you. So the ego helps us to either say, for sure, this person is not talking to me, or this person is dealing with way more than I can handle. You know, sometimes people who are comedians will say, if you cannot laugh at this, I believe your problem is more than.
Yes.
Right? So the ego is that place that says, I think they're trying to get me. Let me grandstand, let me run away, or let me smile and let things go. Mm-hmm. So the grandstanding part is the one that tells you, no, you can't speak to me like that. How dare you? The part of you that wants to run away is like, oh, they are at it again. They've come for me. I'm not worth it. And the part that just says, yes, those are both extremes of it. And the other part that just says, see, let everybody be. If they knew better, they would do better. So understanding how to tell your ego, You need to call yourself back. Have conversations with yourself often. I encourage that. Probably if you have a mirror, just stand by the mirror and tell yourself, Sometimes you need to take it easy and learn to say sorry. It never hurts to say sorry. We hurt people by things we do or say. If you just learn to say sorry, yeah, it might not take the hurt away, but it will let the person see that, oh, he didn't feel or she didn't feel she was right.
Yeah.
She actually did something to turn things around. If the person doesn't accept, that's a different thing. You have done your part. You freed your mind. You freed yourself to say, oh, okay, I know I was wrong. Mm. I apologize for being wrong. I apologize for doing it this way or reacting this way. And I'm really very sorry. Yeah. And sometimes even saying sorry doesn't mean you are wrong. It just means I think I value you a bit more and I don't want you to run off. So
I'm just going to give you one more devil's advocate point on this.
Okay.
This, I agree completely with you, of course, but where how do you deal with people who, I think there's also a problem that comes when people have a particular image of themselves.
Hmm.
Should not be something like me. How can I, you know, it's already, you woke up and you decided that you have a particular image of yours. I don't know. I'm just trying to, you know, because I think that's something that comes up, isn't it? Because if otherwise, it wouldn't be a big deal to be sorry, you know, because otherwise you'd be like, well, you know, I've messed the person up a bit. This has gone wrong. I have to, it's not a big deal. It's like wiping the table. I mean, saying sorry
is, yeah,
like, there's a smudge there. Sorry about that. You know, move on, you know, but yeah, some people take it, there's something else going on. And I just need you to flag it, because I think in the West African context, we have this a lot and society pumps it up with air. That's,
yeah,
somebody of your status after all. You know, where is this coming from? You know, not really. You know, where is this? And then people waking up thinking, yes, you know me, I am a oga. So where is this story? Did somebody tell them that, or did they tell themselves? I mean, we're all just going through the motions of daily life and doing our tasks.
Yeah.
Where is this additional film in the rolling up of, you know, you are the protagonist in this novel and you must wear this suit and you must wear, you know, there's nothing wrong with wearing that suit. I'm just saying, the behavior and the ego,
yes, was
stopping them from acknowledging the truth and saying, I got it wrong. I'm really sorry about that. Regardless of who you're talking to, what age they are, what gender, what socioeconomic status, the reality is it was wrong. You orchestrated it. It was a mistake. We all make mistakes for human. Where does this, I mean, you need to just expand on that a little bit, because I mean, I know we're not going to finish everything we have to discuss today, but this is something that is a problematic, and I'm not going to say problematic for the people themselves. I actually feel like it's more the people who are doing that are damaging themselves.
And
the potential to really enjoy life and to be free and not have all this extra baggage. You know, you're putting on agbada of status every day.
Mm.
Why are you carrying this kind of weight around with you? Nobody's saying you shouldn't be respected. You should, but can we just delve into some of these things and how societies also respect people who are doing that? And when one is not doing that, then they're seen as a fool. So where's the balance, you know?
Okay. Aha. So you brought something to light that people will say you are shaking a table. So you're about to shake this table that is many people sit on.
Yeah.
Okay, so we have a worldwide system that tells you are the best. Your parents keep echoing to you are the best thing that happened. You are the best version of yourself. Just keep being you, do the best. You have systems within school that keeps encouraging people to outsmart the other people. Oh, be the first in your class. Oh, position, just crave to be the top in this, the top in that, the top in that. So there is a system that works people already for competition. There's a system that tells people, see, you have to be the first though. That person that came third is not as good as yourself. Or that person that came first couldn't have taken first if you had just put in a little extra work. Let's switch a bit into the workspace. It's good to have the best worker for the month or stuff to encourage people into good behavior. But sometimes it gets a bit more negative when you start to butt heads of people against each other, or you are that kind of employer who likes to hear then say, what did they say? Oh, what's happening in the corridors? Tell me, feed me information. When you do those things, you are building a system of people who feel that they are better off than the other person already. Mm-hmm. Now let's go into the political scene where, I'm a regular person. I've been living my normal day life, doing the most. I have people that respect me. I have people I respect. But now when I get into an office and suddenly people tell me that, see, boss, you've entered this office now. I know you are a gentleman normally, but you need 5 cars that will chaperone you back and forth. With your status, sir, you cannot use a saloon car. You have to use a Jeep. You have to blare the siren. See, you have to have 20 police people guiding you. You know your position is really critical. If you are not a person who is good, innately good, and who knows, who is self-aware, there is every tendency for you to run down that rabbit hole. I see that play out every day. I see them use their power, military power, political power, to consistently push everybody down. But the truth is this. You have to learn that you are you beyond your position. If all the power you've got is your positional power, you have really nothing. So teaching people, and I think it's something that is lacking in our society. People don't want to speak truth to power. They want to grovel and tell you, yes, sir, yes, ma, you're the next best thing after chocolate. I believe in your government. Keep doing you, keep being you, because they want to curry favors. Helping people know that, see, I respect you, but it's not about me going on the ground and dancing all around you or telling you, oh, you're always right. Helping people get this alternate reality, which is not being a yes man or woman, would help people also get things into perspective. If you're not a yes man, you'll probably be able to look for the politest way to tell someone when they are not doing the right thing, when they are overreacting. Sometimes when you think that the respect is always from the old, from the younger to the older, sometimes it goes reverse. Some older people have so much, they accord so much respect to younger people. And then the younger person begins to feel, oh, if such an old person can respect me, every other person should just kiss my feet. Helping people know that there's someone they should be able to answer to will also help. People don't have people they can actually answer to, people that can actually call them to order. They are always right. They are always the ones that must be heard. They are the people that must have the last word. It's not always the right place to be. I often am in a room where I have to be quiet sometimes to just listen to people. Some people might ask me, I've been on radio shows where I just sit down and listen. But you are here to talk. I'm sorry. I'm just trying not to be that person who consistently wants to shove his opinion in your throat. Because I know I have really smart opinions and ideas. But I don't want to continually be the person that says, oh, I know it. Oh, I can do it. People need to learn that everybody has a place or a part to play in this world. And if you give everybody opportunity, the whole world will go round without troubles. If you get a political position and you are a good person who consistently touches lives, you'll be scared of running through a traffic stop because you are afraid people will hurt you. Yes, opponents will want to hurt you. But let me tell you, if you are a good person who consistently has his people on his side, you don't need to hide. People will protect you because they know this person is innately good. This person is someone you can bank on. But people are scared because they keep trolling people. They keep pushing down on others. So they are afraid that the moment I lose my power, they will come for me.
Yeah.
So that fear of, the moment I'm out of office. But don't we all go out of office? Don't our tenures all end? Don't we all grow old? Don't we all die? Those are questions that should bring things to perspective. These things happen to everybody. We go through a cycle. One day you are powerful. The lion is the most powerful animal doing rah. One day he's so old, a cat can even kick him or whatever. But that's how life is. Helping people see the balance, helping people become aware of the reality of things is just what we need to think people know. Don't kiss ass, basically. Don't kiss ass. You might not get so many favors. at first. But if they find out you're actually real, if they find out you're actually real, it helps. Sorry about that.
It's okay.
Yeah.
Oh, thank you so, so much. That was a wonderful note to end on. Cheryl, thank you so much. It's been such a wonderful, wonderful chat. And
thank you.
I think it will. I think we're going to have.
Thank you too. Thank you.
Don't tell me.
Okay.
I'm actually excited for the viewers once this is posted out. But really keep doing what you're doing. It's
very
important. Probably the most, one of the internal, for me, the internal is the most important because the internal affects everything else. Everything else, things that we see around us are manifestation of internal ideas, feelings, emotions, perceptions, perspectives. So thank you for helping us to work on developing a 360 perspective on life.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Look forward to having you on the podcast again. Thank you sincerely.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Thank you. Bye.
You too. Bye-bye.